A lot has changed this past year, but NHPR's commitment to serving you has not changed at all.
And as a public radio community, we lean on each other. You rely on us for connection, for accurate, independent journalism when you need it most.
And we rely on you to help sustain this essential community resource.
And right now, when you become an NHPR sustainer at $13 a month,
you can choose to give 13 meals to the New Hampshire Food Bank to help local families in need.
Give now at nhpr.org and thank you.
Nobody deserves to be hungry, and we've got the opportunity to change that.
Eileen Laponis is the executive director of the New Hampshire Food Bank, a longtime partner of NHPR.
Well, much like NHPR, we have a responsibility to reach every corner of the state. We're trying to further our impact and not just feed the hunger, but nourish the health. And together we do that.
Become an NHPR sustainer today at $13 a month and choose to give 13 meals to help feed local families in need at nhpr.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Everyone's managing their stress differently these days. Some are binge-watching TV, others are baking like mad, others release tension with exercise, and some are writing. Whether it's that novel they always intended to write, or just a daily journal, or even dabbling in poetry, writing is often said to be therapeutic, but how to get started, and what kind of writing might be best for you? Today in The Exchange, we ask two New Hampshire authors how they're making sense of these times, what they're working on, and ways for you to get going. Exchange listeners, tell us, what have you been writing recently? Is it poems, stories, a daily journal? Or have you been thinking about it, but we're having trouble getting started? Let us know. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We're talking this hour with Alex Peery, New Hampshire's poet laureate and an English professor at Salem State University, and Jed Coffin, author and assistant professor of creative writing at UNH. Well, welcome to you both. And Alex, let's start with you. Both you and Jed are professional writers, but for the rest of us, why should we consider doing this, Alex? What's the value of writing?
Writing in general, or writing during the pandemic? Which one?
I would say in general and during the pandemic, maybe in general and especially during the pandemic.
Well, so good morning, everybody. Well, I think writing is just such an amazing act because, of course, there's the artistic impulse, the desire to create a product that other people can appreciate and read and enjoy later. But I also think it's a really important form of self-care, whether we're in a pandemic or we're in a healthy time, right? Because I think that I approach writing from a mindfulness perspective. I use writing as a mindfulness practice. And by writing, we're actually engaging ourself in a detached, non-judgmental, observant fashion that I think is just a form of self-care and a form of what I call self-grace.
Wow. So non-detached and non-judgmental. But Alex, a lot of people probably write and immediately judge what they wrote and say that's terrible.
That's absolutely true. In fact, if you could see my study right now behind me, I have a picture of what I call Mara, the writing demon or the reader demon. And I say that everybody, myself included, every writer has this constant babble in their head of judgment about their own ability, whether it's about the document they're working on at hand or their overall writing ability. And it's like this little monster created out of self-talk. So you're totally right. Absolutely.
So writing as therapy, though, Alex, it sounds like we shouldn't really care about how good it is.
Writing as a way of self-care and as a way of being and of a consciousness that's gentle and careful with the self. And I avoid binaries. So I think, at some point in the writing process, if you do want readers and you want to have an impact with other people and connect to them through your writing, you do need to think about, editing and quality considerations and all that sort of thing. But at the same time, we also need that relationship with words for ourselves, first and foremostly, I think.
What's the value of writing, Jed? As I asked Alex, always, but especially during a pandemic.
Well, if I can back up just a little bit and you know, one of the, I've always considered myself a writer, but more recently it's felt more convenient to think of myself as someone who works in stories, somewhat because of the fact that I moved into a few different platforms for stories that move outside of text. But I've also found that writing is something that I always think of that takes place on the page, or, you know, when you open a Word document. And recently, something I've been doing with my students and that I do in my own writing practice is I tell stories, whether I'm just talking my way into a voice memo, or, telling a story about my past while I drive, you know, to no one. And so I've always found that the act of storytelling has filled in shapeless periods of my life when maybe I was wandering a little bit, or didn't necessarily have a clear sense of direction, or was in a kind of like existential holding pattern of some kind. And I know that these last several months have felt like a holding pattern for many of us. And so telling stories is a way to bring shape for me to that shapeless, shapeless periods of our life.
That's interesting. Yeah. So it isn't writing, you know, pen or keyboard, but telling stories. And you said, Jed, that you are recently experimenting with different kinds of platforms for your storytelling. What kind of platforms? I'm interested in.
Oh, sure. Well, I had the opportunity to tell a story for the Moth Radio Hour, recently did a TED Talk, and, you know, those are well-known forms. I work in that middle ground sort of between being a memoirist and a journalist, which is, it feels right to me for what the kind of writing I do. But I also think that, I grew up more interested in art, visual art, than I did writing and text. And so, you know, this happened not long after the John Prine, the songwriter, died of COVID in the spring. And I just found myself thinking, like, these songs are beautiful and they're beautiful stories. And he can say so much about an experience in such a short time in 3 minutes that takes me 300 pages to say the same thing. And so I've even played around with songwriting a little bit.
Wow. I'd like your thoughts too, Jed, on the intimidation factor, where instead of focusing on this writing could be therapeutic for me, this writing might help me process the pandemic, people just say, this letter, this essay better be good. What do you think about the intimidation factor? Alex mentioned the sort of monster on the wall.
Yeah. In my experience, the whoever's on the other side of my story reading it, I don't get really take time to think about them until pretty late in the process. I don't know. I rarely know who those people are after I've written something and published it, you know? So I wish that there were some, you know, I think we all have our rituals, right? Like some of us, you know, I take a walk every morning and go down to the river in my hometown, the Androscoggin, and sort of have a conversation with the river every morning before I start writing. You know, and I don't mean to blow it out of proportion, but in some ways it almost feels like I ask permission to start running my mouth, you know, from a force that feels greater than me. So I don't know if people have those things in their lives and their environments, but those things for now will always be there. And it makes me feel like I'm writing for something, but not someone.
Wow. Well, Alex, kind of relates to what you said about mindfulness with writing. And I know that's a big focus for you. How does mindfulness, or this sort of almost meditative quality that you try to approach your writing with, how does that take some of the pressure off, Alex?
Oh, I love that question. And Jed, I just want to say, if I may, I love what you just said about the river. That was just so moving to me just now.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it was amazing. So how does the mindfulness take the pressure off the writing process? Was that the question?
Right, because I know this is a big focus for you, Alex.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I really believe that every moment can be a prolific moment. So every moment is a separate moment in time, and that if we can just sort of approach it, observe what happens without any preconceptions, and that's such an important point to me. I think a preconception is when we gamble on the next moment. We think we know what's about to happen, And when it comes to writing, a lot of people, myself included, we have preconceptions about even what genre we're going to work on or what task, or, you know, if our time is limited because we've got family obligations or something, we think, oh, we're not going to get much done. We have all kinds of self-talk beforehand about what's about to unfold. So I think mindfulness perspective is really helpful because it raises, R-A-Z-E-S, empties every single moment and lets it become a place of possibility. And so for me during COVID, this may sound like a paradox, but it may sound like a paradox. There's two things that happen for me with mindful writing. And one is, or mindfulness in general, we're able to look around and say, you know what, in this very moment, I'm okay. I'm breathing. I'm safe. I'm healthy. I'm here. So one thing is the sense of security. I'm okay. But the other thing that happens is, with a mindful perspective, we're actually noticing that there's so much that's uncertain, so artistically uncertain, and that's cool too. So this balance between I'm safe, I'm here right now, but I also don't know what's about to happen in the next moment, and I'm going to embrace the fact that I don't know. And I find that that pairing makes writing possible for me, that combo.
Wow. So don't have a preconception of what's going to unfold, Alex. Just let it go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because for some forms of writing, you know, more formal writing like an essay or a speech or a novel or a memoir, we're often told, Alex, and I wonder what you think, you know, have an outline, know where you're going, know what your goal is, organize your paragraphs. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of the opposite.
Well, okay, so with self-talk, that constant, what Buddhists call monkey mind, that inner talk that you've got going all the time, there's a lot of things that happen with it. But one thing is, as a writer, you can stalk that self-talk, like actually like a fish pond. So if you're working on a poem or a particular structure, all those things you just mentioned, you can say, you know, I kind of want to think a little bit about X, whatever X might be, concerning an expectation of how that genre should turn out, right? And you're steering your self-talk that way. Or maybe you want to think more figuratively, and if you're a poet or whatnot, you can steer it that way, if that makes any sense.
It does.
So yeah, I really do think you can revise. I think every moment is prolific. Lots of things happen, even during revision or late stage writing process moments. The very end, we're still seeing new things, new ideas, new concepts. It's really intermeshed for me.
You know, Jed, Alex mentioned sort of a Buddhist mindset, and you've written about your summer as a Buddhist monk in your mother's village in Thailand. How did Buddhist practice, if at all, Jed, affect your own writing?
Sure. Well, you know, it's funny. I never really thought of Buddhism as a practice because it was something that I grew up with. That's kind of difficult to answer because I know that there's certainly a meditative, like consciousness clearing element of the way I write. But I don't always find myself, you know, I think the goal of the meditation I've done has always been to bring more peace to myself or to the world. And sometimes when I write, and this might happen for people who are experimenting with writing, you start to uncover pretty gnarly stuff hiding in your, you know, a few layers beneath the surface. And you know, I think writing is sometimes a vehicle into that more difficult material that a lot of us carry within us. And I don't always feel better after I write, you know, and I just do want to say to listeners, like, be prepared to not feel great after it's over, you know, and because I've been on some journeys writing difficult stories that have taken me to places that I never regret going, I've changed afterward. Let's just say that.
That's really interesting. So you're not always feeling good after you finish writing. Is it because you don't like what you did or because you had to explore sort of dark corners that were not fun to explore?
Dark corners that I I had to explore. But I a lot of stuff with family history and questions about, you know, things that happened during parts of my past that I, you know, we kind of truck along. When the world is busy, it's sort of easy to hop on the train, you know, and just keep chugging along with all the important things you got to do every hour. And now that the world, at least my world, has slowed down quite a bit, it's given me time to look around, whether I want to or not. And I think a lot of people, I know a lot of people in my life are struggling right now because we can't stay busy. We don't get that frame of progress to guide us forward, and we have to sit with what we have. And not everyone has much, you know, and so that can be scary, and everyone's trying something different, and maybe writing is meditative then, you know, it's a way to work through some of that stuff.
Again, today in The Exchange, we have two New Hampshire authors talking about how writing helps them process the pandemic, how it might help you. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you this morning. What's your experience with this? Do you find yourself writing more, writing less, or not at all, wanting to avoid some of those dark corners that Jed talked about? Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. And our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also use Facebook as well. Gary writes on Facebook, "I recommend Writing Down the Bones by Natalie Goldberg. It gives you the permission to just write, badly or otherwise. You just put pen to paper and let it fly. Don't think, just write." Gary, thank you so much. And here's an email from Bill who says, "On the first day of home confinement, I was cleaning up my nightstand when I came across my journal, dusty and unused for over a year. I began using it to keep track of the COVID numbers on a daily basis. It has expanded over time to include thoughts, feelings, anger, frustration, happiness, and the little joys I find every day. I added my 193rd entry today." Wow, Bill. Wow. He says, "I thought about doing this in a Word document, keeping an electronic version of it, but there is something about hard copy that is eternal. I will not lose it if I accidentally delete it, my computer crashes, or a virus holds it hostage." Bill, I'm so glad you wrote, because I did want to ask you both, and Alex, I'll start with you, about journaling. You know, setting aside for the moment people who wanted to write the great American novel or write their family's memoir or something. We'll definitely talk about that. But what about journaling during this time, Alex? Do you hear people turning to journaling, like Bill, as a way to kind of process everything?
I do, and I think that is admirable and fascinating. And I have to be honest with you, I'm jealous of you, Bill, okay? I'm jealous of you because, you know, I think journaling, where we're capturing in real time, recording, especially now what's happening, blow by blow, the details that we may forget in 5 or 6 years, just the tangibles of living during COVID, for instance, or the horrible statistics, right? That is such a powerful thing to do. I personally am not of that ilk, although I wish I was. I really wish I was. Instead, I like to just turn to the moment and just see what's arising and look to see in terms of what language and what thought of my own is coming up. It might not have anything to do with the stats on CNN that day or whatnot, but I think both are great reflections of what's happening right now. And, you know, in the future, Bill, people are going to read that journal and they're going to think, or you're going to reread it, and it's just going to mean the world to you. It's a great thing to be doing.
Yeah, and I've read, Alex, that, you know, future historians will greatly appreciate people like Bill. You know, anybody can look up the stats, but that first person narrative of just how it feels to be living in these crazy, crazy times will be really appreciated. It does sound, though, Alex, like you are chronicling this pandemic in your own way, just not a day-by-day recording. So what have you been doing, Alex, to kind of, you know, plod through it day by day?
Well, I have been continuing my writing practice. I get up every morning, probably 360 days of the year to write. And I just, again, I just track the moment. So if that moment is about COVID, then it's about COVID. If it's not, if it's about a project that I've been sustaining for a couple of years, I'll turn to that. But the other thing that I'm really doing is through my poet laureate work, I feel like the way I feel better as a writer is if I'm serving other writers, and especially now trying to help people thrive through their writing during the pandemic. So that's been a major focus for me in terms of offering people ways of writing about COVID and having their own sense of success around that, if that makes sense.
You've been publishing, right, Alex, a collection of community poems called COVID Spring. So is that what you're talking about there?
So April is, you know, is National Poetry Month, right? Last April, and my whole calendar was full of various events that had been scheduled for months. And then, you know, April happened and it was like the calendar was tilted up in the air, and one by one, every date just sort of plummeted to the floor, one cancellation after the next. And I thought, well, okay, but how can I do something about this? You know, I mean, how can I do something about this? And then I thought, you know, it would be great to have April be a very condensed experience for residents in the state, give them support. I gave them 8 online free workshops on writing poetry about the pandemic during the month of April. And then I partnered with Hobblebush Books, Kirsty Walker in Concord, and we put together an anthology. We have 54 poets in this anthology, and it's an absolutely fabulous book, all different ranges of forms, people talking about job loss, grief, acts of friendliness and not so friendliness between neighbors, all occurring during the month of April. It's a fascinating look into the time through poems written by New Hampshire residents.
And again, it's called COVID Spring. And if listeners want to know more about it, we have lots of information on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. But Jed, just for a moment, getting back to Bill and his process of journaling, what do you think about this? Do you think a lot of people began this pandemic with intentions about writing their experiences and recording their feelings, and then at some point it just became another chore, or maybe they were tired of chronicling it, they want to escape? I just wonder what your thoughts are about the value and the work of journaling.
Yeah, I know that there is not that many, but maybe 12 or 15 journals full that, you know, that I kept maybe from age like 18 to frankly, until about the age I had my first child at 28. And those journals are so important to me. They feel like they're the foundations of the writing I do now. I don't journal right now, but I do think that one of the important, if someone is new to writing, the act of journaling and of keeping notes and even just scribbling things down on, you know, the backside of receipts or whatever, what people are doing, I think, is developing a voice, you know, and we're not all told that we deserve to have a voice in our lives. And a lot of people, their voices are erased, you know, for various reasons. And I think that, the act of journaling, even if it doesn't feel like you're headed anywhere, what a writer is doing is developing a personal voice. And it, you know, and voice is one of those strange things. I can't teach it. You know, I always say, like, I can teach structure, I can teach a lot of elements of craft, but voice is something you kind of have to earn, I feel. And that's why I feel like journaling is so important right now. And, you know, maybe, I know people always say, when this is all over, ... But I do wonder that if this is all over, and those of us who've been keeping journals are developing that voice, maybe when it is all over, you'll have a different voice and a voice that's been waiting to come out, you know?
Is there a value, Jed, in simply writing in a journal? Today this happened, 1, 2, 3. You know, crowded at the grocery store, whatever. You know, neighbor left me bread on the front porch. Do people approach journaling thinking they have to be analytical or meaningful or creative? Is it okay to just write A, B, C happened, end of story?
I think absolutely. And I really, you know, the stories begin with details that we don't forget, you know, and for whatever, it might seem like one is merely keeping a ledger of the past or of the day when you're journaling. But I think what a person is doing too is bringing to light what's memorable, you know, and a neighbor brought bread, or I baked bread, or I went to the grocery store and I got hot behind my mask or whatever. I mean, these are the sensory details that are the origins of the more elevated stories that over time with reflection might become more meaningful.
Wow. Okay. So listeners, if you've been thinking about journaling, but it feels too intimidating, Just write down 1, 2, 3, what happened to you. And that could be the material for something bigger down the line. I've got to take a very quick break, but when we come back, more of your emails at exchange@nhpr.org. It's great to hear from people who are interested in writing, writing of all forms. We'll also take some calls at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477. And our guests will share a little bit of their own work. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Support for the Exchange podcast comes from you, our sustaining members, and from New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, two New Hampshire authors on how writing might help you process this pandemic. Listeners, what's your experience with this? Have you found yourself writing more these days or less, thinking about it, but then avoiding it for some reason? Let us know what's going on with you in terms of writing. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can comment on Facebook, or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Alex Peary and Jed Coffin, let's go right to our listeners. And Diane is calling in from Bellows Falls. Hi, Diane. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
So basically, for me, the pandemic writing-wise has been a blessing and a curse, just like I believe Jed was talking about. You know, it's brought up a lot of emotion and things that I haven't thought about in a little while, and writing for me has always been an outlet. And I haven't picked up a pen probably in a good 15 years to write.
Oh, wow,
and
Diane.
The pandemic totally enacted, like, a lot of emotion for me, you know?
So what kind of writing are you doing, Diane? You know, essays, letters, journals, what are you doing?
I do journaling, poetry, you know, whatever just flows that day. But a lot of what I want to do is write about my family history, because there's a lot of trauma and a lot of good, you know. My family's fascinating psychologically because of the trauma that, you know, incurred through generations. And that's basically what I want to write about now. And the pandemic helped me think about that and pursue it, basically.
Wow, Diane, it's great to hear from you. And Alex, what do you think? Really kind of using this time and using writing to process not only the current moment, but some trauma from the past.
I think that's fabulous. Congratulations for you. I think about the pandemic, it's also just given us time to reflect more. All these things are going on in our world right now, not just the pandemic. And, you know, I don't know about everybody else, but I've really found myself reevaluating what it means to be a human being and a citizen and a neighbor and a resident and a family member, right? So the pandemic and the circumstances we're all in right now, it opens up that kind of reflection. And I think that's great. And on top of it, I bet I'm not alone when I say this, that many of our listeners right now probably have different types of work structures, maybe not so much commuting time or et cetera, et cetera. So there are physical changes to how we're experiencing time and space that actually lend themselves to spending more time on activities like writing.
Thanks a lot for calling in, Diane. And here's an email from Marla who says, I'm a poet living in Derry, and quarantine has been the unexpected catalyst for a total creative renaissance after largely abandoning it in my post-college life, marriage, motherhood. Fortunately for me, Marla says, inspiration has been plentiful and writing quick and effortless. I have submitted to several publications, started a YouTube channel in which I present my poems in costume, wow, Marla, and re-engaged with my local poetry workshop group. The recent looseness of time and fewer outside commitments have given me the focus and time to dedicate to my interests. Marla, that's great. Here's another email from Margaret, who says, as a full-time novelist and occasional nonfiction writer, I was unsure how the pandemic would affect my ability to focus on my work. Fortunately, I never lost the ability to concentrate. I think it was enhanced by a desire to retreat from the real world into the imaginary one I was creating. I finished writing and editing my 14th novel, and I began researching for the 15th. But I'm well aware that many of my colleagues, even those working toward a publisher's deadline, have struggled. Homeschooling and writing don't always mesh well. Many whose books were scheduled for publication had their book releases postponed and promotional tours canceled outright. So glad you wrote, Margaret, because Jed, you mentioned you have children, and you know, we're sort of approaching this conversation with the assumption that everybody has more open space and more time. Some of us, myself included, have less time because we're working longer hours than ever. We've got kids at home, they're doing schoolwork. So I wonder just how you are feeling that fullness of time, Jed, yourself.
Yeah, I think initially, you know, it's so strange because we talk about this period of time, and there has been an arc to this period of time for me. In the spring, when it was still cold, I felt like, yes, things were crazy, you know, like trying to get my kids on learning online, which was really difficult. My attention was not on my work. And then summer, you know, we can all be outside and sort of spread out, and we had our room to do the things that we needed to do. And then, you know, now I think I woke up this morning in Maine and it was 32 degrees, and my daughter came out and she was like, "Dad, it's getting cold again." I thought, "Oh my gosh, here we go." So I, you know, I think time and the space we have shapes our creativity in many intimate ways, you know? And so I don't have a place where I can really disappear to write. And for that reason, I don't really think I've been able to do the big deep dives that are required to get into the bottom layers of a book project. And so the forms that I've moved toward have been shorter, require less, you know, focus and attention perhaps in the moment, but that I can kind of take with me. So, I really am embarrassed that I am talking like this, but I know these are desperate times. So I am
no judgment. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I writing songs has just been, I can take a couplet and like walk around and do stuff and just mumble it to myself, my kids on the playground, you know, and I can't do that with a book or a 5,000 word essay.
Well, I'm so glad you said that, because I think a lot of people think, you know, I can only write when I have, you know, 5 hours of empty headspace and no one in the house. And, you know, that's true for some folks these days. But again, for some of us, you know, our households are busy and noisy and there's a lot of people around, a lot of dishes on the counter and so forth. So I really appreciate you saying that you are doing some form of writing or storytelling in little snippets. And I wonder what you think about all this, Alex.
About writing in snippets and dealing with demand. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my kids are, sounds like a little bit older than Jed's kids. They're a little more self-reliant, but you know, again, it's just moment by moment, you know, domestic moments and then writing moments for me are pretty equal. So, and also other things I'm doing moment by moment. I guess I don't parse them out in terms of that. But, you know, I'm sitting in my own study right now. I'm fortunate enough to have the door closed, et cetera, et cetera. So I do have that space. And then getting up very early in the morning helps me gain some distance from domestic or work-related commitments. I, for instance, find it really important to start writing early in the morning. This is just me, because I wake up and my self-talk is still with me. But if I start answering work emails, or I have to go out and sign form, you know, those ENDS forms you have to sign for kids the first week of school, or somebody's about to miss the bus and you're running around the house, those kind of conversations will start chipping into the writing if I don't start earlier in the day. I need to have a little bit more time by myself to ground it, if that makes any sense.
It does. And, you know, since you mentioned, Jed, that you haven't had the open space to do something big, you've been doing little snippets. You mentioned earlier that you've been writing songs. Tell us a little bit about one of the songs that you wrote, because from what I understand, you shared some of it with us, and we'll play it on the air. But go ahead, Jed.
And you know, I really hope that people can use my the embarrassment that I feel about sharing something new as a lever into trying something new. I was running, every morning for a while, I had the discipline to go on a little jog, maybe like 30 or 40 minutes before the kids got up or right as they were getting up or whatever. And there's two bridges in my town. They both go over the Androscoggin, and I would take a little loop. I'd cross one bridge and then come back on the other one. And they're bridges that I've spent a lot of time at, you know, over the course of my life in Brunswick, Maine, where I grew up and where I now live. And one of them they're going to tear down, and people in town are really sad about it. And I understand why. It's a beautiful old bridge. And, you know, for years I've been wanting to write the story of this bridge and why it shouldn't be torn down. And I thought I'd do something, I don't know, like a John McPhee style narrative nonfiction piece about it. But it just felt like it lacked the spirit of what I was feeling. And so lo and behold, I got tired of writing books. I didn't feel like submitting work because I felt sort of ambitionless during this time. I wasn't that hungry to establish I just had a book come out. You know, I felt like I had a year to sort of dial out a little bit. And then a friend of mine encouraged me, who's a singer and songwriter himself. His name's Travis Humphrey. He said, you know, you seem like you really enjoy music. Why don't you start writing songs? And so I just was running down across the bridge one morning early, and I thought, you know, before this bridge comes down, probably deserves like a ballad, you know? And so I just started playing around with it.
All right, well, here we go. We're going to play a little bit on the ear. Go ahead.
There's a bridge in my hometown, made of steel, painted green. State calls it a tear down. They don't know what it means to me. When I was just a young boy,
Jed, that's the song about the bridge. I felt sad when I heard, you know, State calls it a teardown. And I thought, ah, so yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah. And you bring a little bit of your own family history into it, you know, your mom's remarkable story as an immigrant from Thailand, and which you talk about in your TED Talk. Go ahead.
Yeah. You want me to talk about the song?
I'm wondering how it feels to sort of have that put out there, because I know you've been kind of shy about that.
Yeah, you know, it feels good, because I just think, I really believe that my writing has gotten better over the years. And I think most of us, if we put our 10,000 hours or whatever, as they say, we get better. But as we get better, I think we tend to lose sight of where we began and that primal thing that has driven us to create something. And I know in my life, I've really lost touch with that, because I'm what they call like a professional writer, you know, and I just am always like clawing my way back to that original desire to create, because I have opportunities to produce, you know. And so as much as I don't like hearing something that's so raw and like foreign to me formally, I know that I'm going to go to bed tonight and be like, you know, I'm the 21-year-old kid now again, who had never published anything and was going to fight his way into a writing career. And I know instinctively that's the right place to be.
You know, Alex, you had agreed to share a little bit of your poetry with us, too. You were going to read something. Could you tell us what the poem is and read some from it, please?
Yeah, but may I say something about what Jed was just saying?
Sure.
I love what you're saying because it reminds me, I'm about to read something that's, I just wrote it a few months ago. So I love moments where I'm putting myself in a spot where I feel a little less secure. And I had a terrible writer's block for many years. And one of the ways I got over it was by putting things that I perceived as being imperfect in sort of the amber of publication, right? So accepting my own imperfections in the moment. And I think it's so important to, I love what you're saying. It was so important to remain childlike, even as a professional artist or writer, in one's activity, to do it for this sort of primal impulse that's to be creative. That's why I really like naive artists, the so-called unschooled artists, because I want to stay, no matter how schooled I've been, unschooled in a certain sense. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. So in terms of the writing I've done that's directly pandemic related, I've started writing fiction about 2-3 years ago, and I did do a short story that's a spoof off of Boccaccio's Decameron about Italy and the Black Plague. And it has a bunch of 20-year-olds in New York City retreating from the city and going to the countryside. They're rather privileged people and are able to get Amazon packages, et cetera, and deal with the plague, so to speak, because of their wealth and telling stories. So that was a risk for me, you know, working on this fiction. The piece I'm going to read is pretty new. It's a raw poem. And it's got a title that's based on music. The title is Chopin Nocturne Number 2 in E flat, Opus 9, Number 2. And that's a really haunting, haunting sound, right? Haunting piece of music. And so I want that piece of music to sort of play through this poem, which, like many other people that I know, I had COVID dreams, right? So I've had these pandemic dreams. And this poem's about a speaker having a pandemic dream. And by the end of it, institutions are failing. Colleges are closing. Businesses are closing by the end of the poem. I wrote it in a real sense of early on in the pandemic, probably late March, early April, a real sense of fear about what is going to deteriorate out of this experience. So here goes. In the dream footage, I climb over broken furniture that didn't survive. High-backed chairs embroidered in songbirds, ottomans and office chairs, conference tables, desks locked with flimsy keys, the filing cabinets of the Rococo, over a heap of documents no one would ever start, no one would ever finish, on the industrial carpet way below, 17,136 lanyards became alpine flowers, and a memorial for everyone attended by no one. My movements were out of sync with the soundtrack, and in the Baroque window in the modern park, trees made strange dances that spring, and the marble steps to the Institute of Institutions, where I'd once put in an application, were barely passable. Steps seemed covered in buildings, a ruined farmhouse, a college hidden in ivy, the Grand Hotel, its second floor of broken furniture, where a tiny sleepwalker pantomimed climbing. Still more buildings with blankets tossed over them, their towers, domes, Gothic spires under those blankets.
Buildings with blankets tossed over them. That's great. That's really evocative, and a memorial for everyone attended by no one. Give us the name of the poem again, Alex.
Okay, so it has, the title is Chopin Nocturne, number 2 in E flat, Opus 9, number 2. So listeners afterwards, if you want to Google that and just listen to it, it's just a haunting, haunting piece. And for me, it runs through the entire dream sequence.
All right. After a short break, we will hear from a lot more of our listeners talking about how writing has helped them process the pandemic, or just some questions about how to get started if they want to engage with that. You can send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org, or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, two New Hampshire authors on how writing helps them make sense of these times and their ideas for using all kinds of writing to process the pandemic. Listeners, tell us what you've been writing recently, whether it's stories, poems, memoirs, just a daily journal, or have you been avoiding writing? Or maybe you want to get started, but you're having a hard time figuring out how. Send us an email. We'd love to hear from you. It's exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook, or you can give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. We're talking this hour with Alex Peary, New Hampshire Poet Laureate, English professor at Salem State University, and Jed Coffin, author and assistant professor of creative writing at UNH. And right back to our listeners, both of you, here's an email from Lowell who says, I'm working on a musical with a composer partner, and it has been a delight. The story is of the Christmas truce of 1914, World War I. We're planning an outdoor concert in Nashua in May. Lowell, that's great. And Christmas in the Trenches is one of my favorite songs. So let us know how that progresses. That would be great to see. Here's an email from Ginger who says, so timely to be hearing this show. I actually started listening before I went out on my daily walk in the woods. I brought your show with me to the woods. Early on in COVID, Ginger says, I realized two things. My daily walks with my dog were part of what was keeping me mentally healthy, and I discovered that I do my best thinking in the woods. Out of this was born my humble attempts to start a blog. I've written 4 or 5 articles for my blog and have the website, the landing page, etc., but I've been too hesitant to go public with it. What encouragement would you have for somebody in my similar situation? And Ginger, thank you. And Jed, I'm going to throw that to you because you told us before the show you were really kind of not feeling great about sharing that song, but you did it. So go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I wish the advice were more complex than just do it. You know, like you know what I've learned is that, and I think maybe Doris Lessing or someone said this, like, I'll paraphrase what I think the quote is that the reason I don't express myself creatively in more sometimes authentic ways is because I'm afraid of what people are going to say or think or feel. And I've realized that, okay, there's three groups. There's the people who like what I do, which is great, and I'm glad they're out there. And then there's the people who might not like what I do, and usually I'm okay with them not liking something. And then there's the third group, which is certainly the largest group, which is people that kind of don't really care what I'm up to and aren't paying that much attention and I think they're paying a lot more attention than they actually are. So it's sort of like vanity that makes me elevate them in my head. And right now, you know, I just feel like no one cares. Like, no one's watching. We're all just trying to survive. And, you know, the two hobbies that I've taken up are writing songs and singing them. I have the worst voice in my family. It's like a unanimous vote in my family that my voice is horrible, and yet I'm still singing. And then I've become really committed to skateboarding. And I skateboarded for years when I was younger, but I'm 40 and I'm totally busted up from skateboarding, but there's nothing more humiliating than being a bad 40-year-old skateboarder. But that's what I'm doing. And you know, the teenagers who are going to make fun of me, like, they're not around. They're in their homes or, you know, whatever. So it's all right. It's all right just to do it, you know.
I can understand, in a way, Ginger's nervousness, Alex, because, you know, social media is a wonderful place for people to share. But some of that sharing is not positive. People can get pretty nasty. So I wonder what advice or thoughts you have for Ginger, Alex.
Yeah, Ginger, it sounds like you've had a fabulous time creatively going out in the woods and doing the blog, and you formed articles, you said, out of these pieces. So it sounds like they've got some real form to them, too. You know what I would think? I would think maybe getting a friend or another a writer's colleague or a family member, have some audience if it's possible to be in the same physical space with them right now and be safe about it, or talk to them on Zoom, but bring one particular person closer to the set of writing you've done and watch them read it and see how you feel about watching them read it, if you're actually feeling like this is a good thing to have that audience proximity. And I'm guessing you'd get a lot of energy out of actually going ahead and pushing that publish button, because you've already been on NHPR telling us about it. So I think you do want to share this. I feel like you do have that impulse in you, Ginger, right now. You do want to share that piece, that set of writing.
Here's an email from Laura that just came in, and this is great that she wrote, because it has to do with what we talked about, people using journals to just chronicle this time, whether it's a simple ledger of what happened today or more, adding in thoughts and feelings. Laura says, the Monadnock Center for History and Culture in Peterborough sponsored specific journals for people to write in about their COVID experience. The reason they're blank is so that we can draw and have other members of the family join in any way we want. Laura says, personally, I have found it powerful to be able to tell future generations of what I and my family are experiencing. I want the next generations of the Monadnock region to take it seriously and to know that we are as well. It has been quite an excellent outlet for me. That's great, Laura. Martha sent us a poem that she wrote called Yoga in COVID Time. I'm going to read it, probably not in quite as a professional way as you, Alex, but I'll do my best. So here's Martha's poem, Yoga in COVID Time. Today is not a day to write. My words don't come out singing. They chomp and stomp in sentences instead that sound ugly and hateful when they're read. My mood today is down-facing dog. I need to raise my face up toward the sky. I seek and find the hope that lifts my fog. I choose mountain pose instead, standing tall to face the day without dread. Then cheerful words flow from my mouth and place a smile upon my face. They float with ease and pride across the page to express my hopes for change. I delight in sharing them without fear or rage. Martha, thank you for sending us your poem. I hope I did it justice. I really appreciate you writing in. You know, among the community of writers in New Hampshire and Maine, where you live, Jed, what are some of the other themes? I'll turn to you first, Jed. The other themes or the other types of writing that you hear people experimenting with? We've heard you with your songs. We've heard poems from listeners. We've heard somebody's writing a musical. Someone else is writing a memoir. What other sorts of writing, Jed, do you hear people toying with at this time?
Well, let's see.
You can talk about your students, for example, what they're interested in.
I would love to. Yeah. So in the spring, and I, for some reason, I keep going back to the early period, you know, the March, April month, when I think a lot of my seniors were really feeling the shock of, one, having a very important ritual that they'd worked extremely hard toward being taken away by the pandemic. And so I had spent a lot of time online with them in video conferences, one-on-one, and we were in the middle of a live storytelling curriculum. So that had the pandemic not occurred, we were going to go to a public place and they'd be telling their stories, which is horrifying in its own right. Absolutely, they have to memorize a story and tell it to an audience. All of them go through some sort of emotional change after that's over. It's horrifying. But I had to continue the exercise. So I was, Zooming with students, and they were oftentimes sitting in their home in, you know, small towns up north or something. And I could see the world outside. You know, it was quiet and their house was sometimes empty and they had very little to pass their days. And we didn't know what was okay. You know, everyone was, you know, sanitizing every single piece of their grocery list, you know, and so we worked on telling stories. I would kind of ask questions and prompt them, and then they would start telling stories and edit the audio and the video to make the stories that they were telling more coherent. So I don't know what you call this, but it was something less formal than writing their memoirs. It was really just bringing up pieces of their past that they'd never taken the time to articulate. And I do want to say that as much as we're talking about writing that is internal, you know, that we're dredging up pieces of our own experience and putting them out for the first time, maybe, I think there's so much important work that can be done serving others who are new storytellers. You know, I reported my first COVID-relevant story this summer, where I there was a cruise ship stranded in a very small port in down East Maine, and I had to talk to locals and people on the cruise ship who had been on there for 5 months, and I had to ask them about what their experiences had been like, and it was that helped me understand this time in our lives more completely than through the pinhole of my own experience. So working with, you know, maybe healthcare providers, my mom's a nurse, you know, giving them the opportunity, you can document their lives, and maybe the burden, the emotional burden, isn't on you to tell a story about your own experience, but you get to bring to light the experience of someone who maybe doesn't have the time or resources right now to tell a story. Do that work. It's really important. It's as important as telling your own story.
Let's take another call. This is RJ from Heartland, Vermont. Hi, RJ. You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hi there. Can you hear me okay?
We sure can. And RJ, I hate to say this to you, but we don't have a lot of time. So you could make it brief, I'd sure appreciate that.
You got it. Okay. So I have been writing most of my adult life, but during the pandemic and at the very beginning of it, tapped into a tired, old, iconic book from the 80s called The Artist's Way. Perhaps the authors recognize it. It's been really helpful for me, but I was wondering if both of your authors today had any recommendations for any book, how-to, or any adage a professor of theirs might have given them, something very brief and succinct that could help stimulate me to continue writing.
Oh, RJ, I love that question. Thank you so much. Alex, either an inspirational quote or a book that you have read that, you know, helped you out.
Sure. I highly recommend the book from the 1970s by Peter Elbow called Writing Without Teachers. You can get it on Amazon. There's a gazillion used copies. Writing Without Teachers.
How about you, Jed? Anything that you can share real quick that
real
has
quick,
helped
yeah.
you push along? Yeah.
Best writing advice I ever got to get through a writer's block is I had a teacher. His name was Dan. And he said, you know, if you don't know what you want to write next, just write me a letter. And the first two words of your essay should be Dear Dan. And that opened up all sorts of cool stuff for me. So write someone a letter.
All right. We will put that recommendation and the book that Alex mentioned on our website. Alex and Jeb, we could have talked a lot longer. This was really great. Thank you very much. Alex, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. Be well, everybody.
That's Alex Peary, New Hampshire's poet laureate and an English professor at Salem State University. Jed, it was great to meet you too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, and good luck to everyone out there who's listening.
That's Jed Coffin, author and assistant professor of creative writing at UNH. And you can check out their writing and their talks on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. You're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.